Fangoria presents Class of 79.
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 79 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turned 40 this year. I'm Natasha Pacetta, your host and vanguard of the vault over here at Fangoria, and this is our series on Phantasm. I'm so grateful to be able to bring this series to you guys because if you haven't guessed, Phantasm is my favorite movie of all time, and I can't believe I've had the opportunity to interview Don Coscarelli, Reggie Bannister, Paul Pepperman, and now Michael Baldwin. Yes, rounding out our series on Phantasm is the boy himself. Michael talks about the international fame he had before Phantasm and what it was like being chased by a crowd of Japanese girls, dancing with Angus Grimm in the mausoleum, and he offers up expert advice on acting. But before we get to Mike's stories, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. In 1979, the first issue of Fangoria was released into the world. It's been 40 years and Fangoria is better than ever, each issue bringing you 100 pages of exclusive, carefully curated content honoring horror's past, present, and future. These articles and interviews will never be published online, so the only way to read them is by getting your hands on a physical, collectible copy of your own. We can't give anything away that's in the magazine because we want the experience to be a surprise, but we can safely say that you will not want to miss a single page. Head on over to Fangoria.com to learn more and to subscribe. And while you're there, make sure you enter the promo code CLASSOF to save 15% off your subscription. That's Fangoria.com, promo code CLASSOF. And I want to tell you about Cinema Makeup School. Cinema Makeup School prepares the next generation of makeup artists in the full scope of the makeup industry, from beauty and special effects to creature design and 3D printing. From their individual courses, programs, and comprehensive tracks, you can build a path that suits your individual career goals with industry professionals guiding you every step of the way. Sign up today at cinemamakeupschool.com. That's cinemamakeupschool.com. Now, let's get to Mike's stories from his time working on Phantasm. You were familiar with Don way before Phantasm. You had starred in his first feature film, Kenny and Company.
And that is true.
While it really wasn't a hit here in the U.S., it was huge in Japan, and you went over there to promote the movie. What was that like?
Well, it was a hell of a great trip, for one thing. There were no parents involved, and the only chaperone was Coscarelli, and he was only 22, I think. And so, you know, we had a great, great time, and it was a, as you say, a promotional tour all over the country. And, you know, we arrived, and they had already, Tohutohua was the distribution company. They had already been promoting the film quite a bit before we arrived. And we got off the plane, and we were kind of movie stars already. It was hilarious. And I don't, can't remember if had the film been released or not yet. I don't even know. But we walked off the plane, and man, we ran down the street like we were the Beatles being chased by little Japanese girls. It was fantastic.
That's hilarious.
If you're in junior high school and you can somehow find yourself being chased down the streets of Tokyo by Japanese, by a crowd of Japanese teens, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's pretty good. But the funny part is, like, when I got back to school, I think our trip was a 10-day trip or something. I got back to the eighth grade at my regular junior high school, and I was just no one. And no one gave a shit about me back in the States. It's just in Japan, I was a big hit.
That's so crazy. It just must have been so shocking to be so young and just have that kind of following already, even though it was international. And, you know, like you said, no one cared in the States. But as a young kid, like, how did you process that?
I don't think I can answer that question. I don't know. I like to think that I did it. I processed with some style.
Nice.
And that may not be true, but that's my story.
I'll take it.
Thank you.
So you were really great in Kenny and Company, and Don Coscarelli kind of pinpointed you for his next movie, Phantasm. Did you and Don have conversations about what he wanted from you in this character?
Well, of course. We talked about that a lot. And, you know, I can't possibly remember the details of those conversations, to be quite honest. But, you know, mostly it's about, in casting something like that, when a 13-year-old is going to theoretically carry the movie, you know, it's very important who the other actors are around that person. And so I think one of the greatest things that Coscarelli did was to cast Bill Thornbury and Reggie Bannister both. And we just had a chemistry that was very obvious and kind of pure on screen. It was very authentic, and we were all just great friends. And Bill and I, we were like brothers after a while, you know? And so I think that plays very well to this day.
Totally agree. The relationship between Mike, Jody, and Reggie really is what makes Phantasm so special. And you were the youngest of that group. You were just 13 years old. As a 13-year-old actor, were you more or less just being a kid, or were you very aware of your acting choices at that young age?
You know, I had already been a professional actor for a while, and had been doing it for some time. I had been working since I was about maybe 9 years old. So, you know, I knew what to do. I knew how to do it. You know, I had been going to, you know, acting classes and doing all the things that you're supposed to do. And so, you know, I guess I don't know what the answer is. Are you just playing yourself? Are you using the techniques learned? I don't know how much technical development there can really be for a 13-year-old actor. You either have to be able to be natural or not.
Right.
So I don't know. It's maybe a very convoluted answer, but I think there's a bit of both going on.
Well, it definitely seems like that. In acting, you're always bringing yourself to the part. So that just makes sense.
That is true. What we teach in class is that, you know, the finding that authentic moment is the most important thing. And that's what any actor is trying to do. You're trying to find, you know, dear God, some authentic moment that you can claim in a way or express, you know. And so that takes a lot of coordination. And over the years, what acting really is about coordination. You know, you got to be able to move and to behave and to speak. And so if you can coordinate those three things in a natural way, then you have a chance at finding that authentic moment.
On Phantasm, I'm sure you guys did a lot of takes. Was there any one scene that you can remember that was just completely exhausting to do over and over again?
That's a good question. An exhausting scene? Well, I think, first of all, it's just difficult working nights.
Right. It was a lot of nights.
You know, as anybody in the business will tell you, you know, working nights is rough. And of course, if you're making horror movies your whole life, then that's pretty much all you ever do is work nights. So everything happens at night. I wonder why that is. There's no horror happening in the daytime. Why does the horror happen at noon?
Yeah, right. Know. That would be more convenient for everyone.
Only happens at midnight. So anyway, you know, I can't really think of a particular scene that was, you know, exhausting at all. I can just say that, you know, working nights is tough and it's always exhausting.
Yeah, true. Well, let's get into some specific points of the production. What was it like the first time you saw Angus Scrimm in character as the tall man?
I think that, and you'll have to check with Don on this, but I think that the very first scene that we shot together, I think this is true, was Angus. Mike goes up to a couch and he pulls aside the curtain, and there's Angus behind the window, on the outside, behind the glass. Angus, you know, gives him a sneer and then very quickly bursts through the glass.
Right.
Does he have a knife in his hand, maybe? I can't remember. But anyway, I think that might be the first scene that Angus and I shot together. And, you know, I don't really remember, like, you know, having some initial thoughts of, you know, I know what you're kind of looking for is, oh my God, it's the tall man. But, you know, it's really not like that.
Right. No.
It really is not like that. I wish I could say, I know that people would like it to be like that, but that's not the way it is. Filmmaking is such a slow and laborious process. And, you know, everything takes a lot of time and there's a lot of setup and everybody's hanging around and you're kind of, actors in particular are just waiting a lot of the time to be ready to go. And so, you know, I don't really recall any reveal moment where Angus stepped out of his trailer and, oh my God, there he was and all his regalia. I don't really have any memory of that.
I watched some of the home videos that were on the Laserdisc for Phantasm.
Right.
And I remember the behind the scenes of them, of you and Angus at the window, and you were just laughing.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, exactly. just goofing around, and, you know, because who knows how long that took to shoot. That just that one thing of him crashing through the glass, took a half a day or something like that. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Probably took a long time.
There's a scene where the tall man grabs you by your neck and, like, looks like he's just hoisting you up in the air, like, with no, you know, it was, like, nothing at all. How did you guys actually do that?
I believe I'm standing on a dolly, on the dolly head. So it's a hydraulically operated dolly. So you stand on the dolly head, and, you know, out of below the bottom of the frame, and I'm standing on it. I'm kind of balancing on it, right, with my toes. Probably there's not much surface to stand on. And then I think it's a handheld shot. But there's a dolly operator, but there's no camera on the dolly. It's just me. And he's pulling, and then at the right moment, when Angus is supposed to lift me up, then he operates the dolly and the hydraulic lift that would lift the camera, lift me up, and that's it.
Ah. So just simple, off-camera
very
techniques.
Actually, that's right, very easy. It's all about practical effects on Phantasm.
And that's what is so great about, you know, especially Phantasm 1, everything was, you know, you just had to do it that way because there was no option.
Well, that's true.
You know, but it looks so great, and, you know, there's the ending scene of Phantasm where you get pulled through the mirror, which is, you know, of course that ending is shocking in itself, where it's like, what, there's no happy ending? Like, where's Mike going? Is he gonna die now? But it's shocking in itself. But how did you guys do that scene where you get pulled through the mirror?
Just as you see it, just like
as
that.
You know,
the mirror is a special kind of you know, breakaway glass purchased at the prop house, and they're pretty expensive, as I recall, and they only had two or three of them at the most. So you can only do it a couple times because there just isn't enough breakaway glass, right?
Right.
And so there's a guy standing in the closet, you know, made up with some, you know, grisly hands, and one, two, three, that's it. The guy comes crashing through. It was pretty scary, you know, not the funnest thing to do, actually.
Of course, the portal scenes in Phantasm are really interesting. How did you guys make it look like you were getting sucked into this other red world?
With, you know, practical effects with mirrors. Basically, there's the shot where Mike's hand goes through the space gate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little, you know, a little whistly sound effect there, right? And then he pulls it back out and he looks at his hand. And so that's just a mirror effect. There's a mirror placed in such a way that, you know, makes it appear as if his hand disappears. No digital effects there either.
Also from the home videos on the Laserdisc, I saw you and Bill Thornberry rehearsing the demon bug scene, which was quite hilarious to watch it being rehearsed.
Yeah.
Do you remember that day when you guys were
doing
that?
I do remember that day because I ran up and down those stairs a bunch of times that day. And at one point I got kind of got sick. I remember, like, I got, after we were doing it for a while, and I got, you know, like, overheated or exhausted, or maybe I was dehydrated or something, and I was just like, whoa, I think I'm going to pass out. I had to sit down, and they were bringing me water, and it's like, oh, this kid's going to die if we don't do something. And I felt really bad. I had to take a whole break, and I was just like, I thought I was going to barf. I don't think I threw up, but it was close. So that's what I remember about that day, I was getting sick.
Oh.
And then, you know, I don't know, I recovered and got my blood sugar up or something, and then we carried on and kept going.
There you go. I mean, that's the worst that happened on the set of Phantasm. That's pretty good.
That is correct.
Now, is there a moment specifically from filming Phantasm that you just hold dear to you and will always remember?
I'm not so sure if I would classify this as a memory that I hold dear. However, I will say that, you know, there's the scene in the mausoleum where, I guess it's shortly after the bloodletting. Mike is standing there and the tall man appears behind him. He turns around, he says, oh shit. And then they do a little, like, a Western walk toward each other, like a gunfight,
yes,
you know, the OK Corral kind of deal. So I remember pretty specifically working with Angus and Don about that scene and what we were going to do and how we were going to make it cool. And, you know, just coming up with the as Angus would have called it, the dance. He would have called it a pavan. Yes, we'll do a pavan. And like, all right, what the hell's a pavan? It's a dance, Michael. We'll do a dance in the mausoleum. Like, all right, here we go. It'll be like a Western, right? He says, right. So we said, you know, we choreographed little steps and the thing we're going to do. And that's one of the more, to me, memorable scenes in the film, and something that I remember. And if we can say that I hold it dear, then okay.
I love that scene, and it is so very obvious, you know, what's going on. Like, I love your oh shit. And then it is like you guys are gearing up to do some kind of shootout. And it's just perfect. It's such a great scene.
Well, I think that kids wish they could be that fearless. Nobody is that fearless. Only fictional characters in movies are that fearless. Anybody else would be pissing themselves and running the other way. You wouldn't go walking toward the evil doer.
You just
wouldn't. And so when you get to see that kind of strength and what is possible and how to be fearless, I think that's resonating.
I can tell you that the first time that I saw Phantasm, and I will always remember this, was the night before I started high school. So I was 14 years old and had never seen the movie before, and I rented it from the video store, and I put it on and watched it by myself. And, you know, I was all nervous about going to high school the next day. The Mike character really resonated with me, and the next day when I went to high school, I was so terrified of the other kids and just this other culture that I hadn't been exposed to yet, that like I had wished I was with Mike in Morningside instead. and I will always, always remember that, being like, damn, I wish I was at Morningside instead of being here. But I will always hold a very special place in my heart for Phantasm. And I do have one more question for you, Mike, and that's a question I ask all of our Class of 79 graduates, and that is, what advice would you give yourself 40 years ago?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, and I know what the advice would be, but I also know that I wouldn't take the advice.
Oh.
So it's like, I don't know. I think it would be something really cliche, like stay in school and don't do drugs. Something like that would be really smart.
I know you teach acting now. Is there any advice you have for our audience members who are interested in acting?
No, that's a much easier question to answer. Yes, of course.
There you go.
My God. So much easier. Listen, it's the advice that people don't want to hear that is usually the best advice. And so it is with my standard advice for people that I'm never going to meet and are just listening to the sound of my voice. The advice is this. Oh, you want to be a professional actor or a performer of some kind? You want to have an actual career? So the number one is you have to know why you're doing it. Right? Why am I doing this? Why do I want to have this career? But that's your business. But answer that question. And it can change, but you have to answer the question. Like every year, you need to ask yourself that damn question over and over again. Why am I doing this? Mm. So that's the first thing. But the advice really is be a triple threat. Mm. That's it. Be a triple threat. You have to act and you have to sing and you have to dance. You have to do all those things. And even if you don't want to be a dancer, which is fine. I didn't want to be a dancer. I'm a terrible dancer. You still have to go to dance class. You have to go to dance. You don't have to be the greatest dancer. You don't have to study dance 6 days a week as if you're going to be a professional dancer. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying be a triple threat. You're going to have to take voice lessons and learn how to sing. You're going to have to take dance lessons and be able to move at least, you know, moderately well on stage. And of course, you have to be in acting class all the time as much as you possibly can with different coaches as the years go by, right? Be a triple threat. If you never are a dancer and you never are and never become a singer, but you studied both of those disciplines, I promise you it will absolutely 100% inform all the acting you'll ever do. Mm. You must be able to coordinate these three things. It's like I said before, you got to be able to coordinate your speech and your behavior and your movement. Guess what? That's dancing, singing, and acting. But guess what? People don't want to hear that. And they go, I don't want to go to dance class. Ballet? What the hell is that? I don't want to go to ballet class. I'm not a dancer. And what I say is, bullshit, get your ass in dance class. And do it for a little while. You don't have to do it forever, but, you know, you got to move your body on the stage. You got to learn how to do it.
Michael Bovin, get your ass in dance class.
That's right. That is right.
You play a good game, boy, but the game is finished. Now you die.
Go!
Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 79. We really appreciate you tuning in. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd love it if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 79 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, produced and hosted by Natasha Pacetta, executive producers Dallas Sonier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safavimer, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording design and mixing by Natasha Pacetta, music by James Malone, for Fangoria, Brandon Wynerdy, Jason Koslerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.